It's so good to see everybody back tonight. I hope you've had a wonderful afternoon, that you've taken the time to enjoy family and family time and maybe get a little rest, a little nap. Hopefully I won't put you to sleep tonight. Tonight's lesson be kind of similar to what we talked about this morning. I'm hopeful that it's going to help just extend that lesson a little bit into the way we think. And that'll make more sense as we go along. But we hear the word spiritual bandied about a lot today. People talk about spirituality, spiritual experiences, and lots of different connotations. And there seems to be this war between being religious and being spiritual. One of the things that I hear a lot for those who do not attend church, do not attend worship, or not a part of a group of believers, is they'll say, well, I'm spiritual, I'm just not religious. I don't believe in religion. What brings up an interesting question for us as Christians? What does it mean to be spiritual? What does it mean to be religious? And so for a few moments tonight, I want us to think about that. Now, when we look at our world, it becomes very easy for us to begin to think that everybody's leaving religion, that everybody's leaving Christianity. Well, I'm not sure that's the case necessarily. There has been a decline in Christianity. I want to show you a couple things just a moment, but for just a moment, I also want to look at Romans 8, verse 6. Romans 8, verse 6, Paul is making a comparison for the Romans between different mindsets, different ways of processing information, of looking at life. What's your outlook on life? How do you view experiences? What's your spectrum or filter? When you experience something in life, where does your mind go first? Well, he says in the first part of verse 6, he says, for to be carnally minded is death. And so carnally minded just means that I'm someone who sees everything through a temporary earthly standpoint. Everything's physical. Science is this way in a lot of ways. Against science, not true science in any way, but science believes that everything in our world is tested through the senses. We have five senses, right? Taste, touch, smell, sight, hear. Okay, and through those five senses, we experience our existence. And so anything beyond that is not worth the time of science. Because those things can't be tested. Those things can't be looked at through their microscopes. And so they're very carnally minded. They're very physical. But then he says, at the end of that, he says, but to be spiritually minded is life and peace. Well, how are they really different? What's the difference between a spiritually minded person and one who's carnal? Well, we're going to come back to that. So that's the question. Let's let that question out there, and then as we go through here, hopefully we can find an answer to that. I want to share a couple of thoughts here for you. But before we do that, understanding these differences are going to be important for us as Christians. It's going to be important for you and me to be pleasing to God so that I have the correct mindset as I approach God. This is from a study done in 2011, not that long ago. And way back, it first goes all the way back to 1910. How did the world look in 1910? Well, in 1910, where do you think most Christians lived? Europe. Unbelievably, right? We look at Europe today, and then as you see in the chart, things have changed, right? In 1910, over 66% of the world's population, or of the world's Christians, and I'm using that sense broadly, okay? Just anyone who claims Christianity, was in Europe. And then you could see America was second at that time with only 27%. And so we fast forward 100 years, and then we look at the world again, and things have changed. In America now, we are still considered at the forefront of Christianity. We have the most Christians, again, in a broad sense. We may disagree with their assumption about being a child of God. But in Europe, that number has went all the way down to 25%. Now only a quarter of the world's Christians live in Europe. Look at Africa, the Sub-Sahara. It's risen tremendously. It went from 1.4% to 23.6%. And then Asia, from 4.5% all the way up to 13%. And so that's kind of how the world looks today. America's actually risen in per capita of Christians around the world. There's still a lot of religious people in the world. There are a lot of religious people here in America. When you look at Christianity, kind of it breaks down this way again, 2011. Over half the world's individuals claiming to be Christian are of the Catholic religion. Catholic religion still dominates the world. Protestant, 36.7. Orthodox, 11.9. Then you see other Christian. That'd be us, 1.3. Still, a tremendous amount of people claim Christianity. Look at this chart. Again, this is from right around the same time, 2010. Estimated 2010 Christian population. In America, 246 million people in America over that number are Christians, or claim to be Christians. Of the world's population of Christianity, 11.3. I don't know why that number would be different. But you still see, though, that Christianity is still important to a lot of people, the religion of Christianity. And then you can go through and you can see the other world's religions. What's interesting, you go to Mexico, 95% of the Mexican people claim Christianity. And you have several others there. Okay. So we bring all that up for this point, to ask this question. Those people claim religion. They claim to be religious people. Is being religious enough? Is it enough for me to be religious? Well, look at James chapter 1 and verse 26. James chapter 1 and verse 26, James writes, If anyone among you thinks he is religious and does not bridle his tongue, deceives his own heart, this one's religion is useless. Religion can be useless. And what's interesting is here is James in 26 starts out by saying, if anyone thinks he's religious. There are a lot of people in the world who think they are religious. But James says, just because we think that way doesn't make it so. Some things that we need to consider. Number one, what does being religious really mean? Okay, if we break it down into practical sense, what does it mean to be religious? When someone tells me, I'm religious, what does that mean? Well, we know for people that can be very different depending on their framework, their understanding of the word religious. Religious, as defined, can be defined as relating to or believing in a religion. That's very broad, isn't it? Very, very broad. Notice though what spiritual, how it's defined. Of or relating to or affecting the human spirit or soul, as opposed to material or physical things, not concerned with material values or pursuits. Those are very different definitions, aren't they? One's about ritual. One's about, could be just about a simple assent to a belief system. I remember I met someone one time who I asked what the religion was. Or no, we started off asking, do you believe in God? And they didn't. But they ended up being a part of a religious group. They said they were Catholic. Now think about that mindset. I think it's similar to what the Jewish people had gotten into. For some people, religion becomes tradition. It's what my family's done. It's what they've taught me to believe in. But just being religious doesn't necessarily mean I believe in what I'm being told. Or even what I'm saying. Notice what Jesus said about being religious. Notice Matthew 6, chapter 6 and verse 5, and we'll read through verse 7. Matthew 6, 5 and following. And when you pray, you shall not be like the hypocrites. And of course, the hypocrites, who's he talking about there? He's talking about the Pharisees. Okay, the religious leaders of the day. He says, when you go and pray, I don't want you to pray like they pray. Well, why? Why not, Jesus? They're our leaders. They're the people who are sitting up front telling us about how religious they are. Shouldn't we do as they do? Well, he says, for they love to pray standing in the synagogues and on the corners of the streets that they may be seen by men. But surely I say to you, they have their reward. He's pointing out for us there's a difference between being religious and being spiritual. They were counterfeit Jews. They were counterfeit. They looked real. They said all the right things. They wanted to be noticed. But what they were inside was very different. Notice what he says to his disciples. But you, when you pray, go into your room, and when you have shut the door, and pray to your Father who is in secret, and your Father who sees in secret will reward you openly. And when you pray, do not use vain repetition as the heathens do, for they think that they will be heard for their many words. What are you telling us, Jesus? If people don't see me being religious, they don't see me praying on the street corners and using eloquent words, they may not think I'm religious. They may not think I'm a Christian. What's his point? Being a Christian is more than just the outward activity. It's more than what science wants to believe in. It's more than just what I touch and what I see, but it is something deep in my soul. We talked about last week about being rekindled with fire from inside. That's what he's talking about here. Sincerity, honesty with God, not being counterfeit. Don't be a counterfeit Christian. Don't be, for them, a counterfeit Jew. Be real. Notice Matthew 23, 27 and 28. We're back up to 27. Jesus again says, woe to you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites. What's a hypocrite? It's a counterfeit, right? Someone who says one thing but does something else. or is it genuine? He says, woe to you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites, for you are like whitewashed tombs, which indeed appear beautiful outwardly, but inside are full of dead men's bones and all uncleanness. Even so, you also outwardly appear righteous to men, but inside you are full of hypocrisy and lawlessness. You ever been to a tomb? You know, you can see these now, above ground tombs, and they dress those up. They paint them bright white, and they put all kinds of designs in them. And they look pretty. Some of them look beautiful. But in the end, what are they? They're a box that contains human remains. The Pharisees, the scribes, the religious of the day, had become dead inside. Had been so concerned about the way they appeared on the outside that they had forgotten about the inner man. They had forgotten about true spirituality. Notice Revelation chapter 2, verses 1 through 7. Here, Jesus talking to the Ephesian church has lots of good things to say about the Ephesians. But notice verse 4. He says, nevertheless, I have this against you. Now, he said all these good things about him. And he'll even say something after this is good. But notice the impact of this one thing. He said, nevertheless, I have this against you, that you have left your first love. They had forgotten about being a true follower of Jesus from the inside out. They'd become about all the things we do on the exterior and have forgotten to take care of the interior parts of who they are. They've forgotten about the inner man. They've grown cold and empty. They've become like those whitewashed tombs. They were dead on the inside. And then notice verse 5. Remember, therefore, from where you have fallen, repent and do the first works, or else I will come to you quickly and remove your lampstand from its place, unless you repent. Now, he had a list of good qualities, and he'll go on in the very next verse, in verse 6, and say, but we're in agreement on the Nicolaitans. I'm glad you're doing what you're doing then. And he said it before verse 4, all the other stuff they were doing. But they didn't have their heart right. Their attitude and the focus of their life was not in proper alignment with God. They were doing all the things that people looked at them and they said, wow, look how on fire they are for God. Look how they combat false doctrine. But in reality, they were dead. Beware tradition. Colossians chapter 2. In verse 8, Paul is trying to help the Colossian church to understand that you can't be a Christian and a Jewish person in religious practice. Now you can't, your heritage doesn't change, but who you are, how you practice as a follower of God must change. Notice what he says in verse 8. Beware lest anyone cheat you through philosophy or empty deceit. Now, how are they going to be able to do that? According to the traditions of men, according to the basic principles of the world, and not according to Christ. Colossians, the Jews in Colossae, were wanting to go back to Judaism. They wanted to pull pieces of it. And they wanted to bind those things on the Gentiles. They wanted the Gentiles to be circumcised for one thing. They were all about the religious practices. But they weren't thinking like spiritual Christians. They were thinking like men. And now they were appointing traditions to equal status with the commandments of God. This is something that's important for us to remember. We get stuck in our traditions, and we say that's the way it has to be. And those things become more important to us than being a true spiritual follower of God. And we're in trouble. We have a lot of traditions, right? Things we do certain ways because that's the way we've always done them. They're not necessarily biblical or unbiblical. They're just the way we've decided to do it. We can get into those situations where we're just in that rut and we think we got to hold on to those things. Are we being truly spiritual in those moments? Are we thinking like God thinks? Are we thinking like we think? Like other people. They needed to break loose of those things. So then what does it mean to be truly spiritually minded? What does it mean to be truly spiritual? Is it an emotional experience? I've heard this statement more than one time. People referring to maybe they've been to the Grand Canyon or they've been to the pyramids or they've seen some tremendously beautiful thing. And they said, wow, that was a spiritual experience. Spiritual experience. That made you close to God? I mean, maybe if you looked at His beauty and then you appreciated God for His creativity. That's not the sense I get from people who say that. They want to assimilate that or make that equivalent to being faithful to God and following His commandments. Being spiritual isn't just about having an emotional experience. Sure, we are emotional people and emotions are involved in our worship and those things, but being spiritual is so much more than that. It's a mindset. It's the way we think. Romans chapter 6, 12 and 13, Paul wrote, therefore, do not let sin reign in your mortal bodies, that you should obey it in its lust. And do not present your members as instruments of unrighteousness to sin, but present yourselves to God as being alive from the dead, and your members as instruments of righteousness. You want to think about spirituality, being a spiritually minded person. That's it. It's about being alive in Christ. He has spent the whole time in Romans 6 talking about, over and over again, about becoming a new man. That in Christ you become a new person. That includes the way we think and the way we perceive the world. The Romans needed to change the way they perceived the world around them. They could no longer just hold on to sin and the lust of this earth. They needed to get rid of those things. They needed to focus on higher things. It comes down to having a proper focus on life. Matthew chapter 6, 25-34, Jesus talks about worry. And He talks about, you know, we get so caught up in being so concerned or burdened with worrying about this life, about what we're going to eat, what we're going to wear, where we're going to live, what we're going to drive. And Jesus reminds His followers, don't you understand that God's going to take care of you? That God's going to give you all the things you need? Look at the birds. Look how God arrays them. And He says, the birds are arrayed more beautiful than anything Solomon could have come up with. So why do you worry about those things? Do you not trust in God? Aren't you focused on something greater than just earthly affairs? Isn't life more than that? Colossians 3, 1 and 2, Paul says, if you were then raised with Christ, seek those things above, where Christ is sitting at the right hand of God. Set your mind on things above, not on things of the earth. What occupies most of your thoughts? What are you most concerned with? Are you concerned about your life with God? Or is it other things? Is it the day-to-day life that concerns you more, that you spend most of your time concentrating on? Jesus says, why do you do that? When you became a child of God, you said, I trust in God, I have faith in God to take care of me. What happens to us as Christians is we get caught back up in the world and we start worrying about things again. Well, what have we done? We've let trust in God go out the window. Being spiritually minded means I have to put my mind in a different place. Philippians 4 and verse 8, Paul reminds us, finally, brethren, whatever things are true, whatever things are noble, whatever things are just, whatever things are pure, whatever things are lovely, whatever things are of good report, if there is any virtue, if there is any thing praiseworthy, meditate on these things. What does it mean to meditate? What does it mean for me and you to meditate? Meditation is a deep concentration, being filled in our minds with God, with the things of God. We need to empty ourselves of all these bad things. But we've got to fill ourselves up with the good, with what's holy, what's in His Word, with the work of the church. Those are the things that should be in our focus. Ask yourself this question anytime you're involved in an activity. Is this a benefit for my spiritual being? Now, are there things we do in life that aren't necessarily part of the church work? Absolutely. We do things, we enjoy things in life. There's nothing wrong with that. But what we have to really give consideration to is what I'm doing a detriment to me spiritually? Am I defiling my spiritual being by what I'm doing, by what I'm thinking about, by what I'm worrying about? Or am I being spiritually benefited? Am I giving time to seeking after spiritual nourishment, spiritual encouragement? How about looking about the spiritual needs of others, giving some consideration about other people? I heard someone say this recently, and I don't remember who said it, but they were talking about, you know, when you're down and out, one of the best cures for that to give yourself to helping someone else. Why? Because you stop thinking about all your worries and aches and pains, and you help someone else. That's some of the best medicine to overcoming depression. Be concerned about somebody else and not so consumed with myself. In doing that, we fulfill what Christ did for us. This morning we spent a lot of time in the Philippians 2, 5 through 8. Let this mind be in you. We spent time talking about the mindset of Jesus Christ. How that on the cross, He had you and I in mind. That was His motivation. That's where His goal came from. That's where His determination came from. Is that He had consideration for us and the good that He could provide through His sacrifice. Galatians 6 and verse 1. In discussing with the church in Galatia, the church of Galatia, Paul wrote, brethren, if a man is overtaken in any trespass, you who are spiritual, restore such a one in a spirit of gentleness, considering yourself, lest you also be tempted. Paul is talking about when you have an erring brother and they've gotten off into sin. We need to approach that person with a spiritual mindset. Now, we can make that application to when we have someone who's erring, who's outside of Christ, but we can use that same kind of mindset in all the things we do, not just in seeking out the lost. But that should be a valuable resource of the church. When we have someone who's fallen away, are we reaching out to those people? That's a real test to see if we're spiritually minded. The spiritually minded in a congregation are going to say, hey, you know what? I haven't seen them in a while. I wonder what's going on. And they're going to be concerned about that person's soul. But those who are earthly, carnally minded, I don't have the time to deal with that. I've got my own mess. Stark contrast that Paul is painting for us. How spiritually minded are you and me? James chapter 1, and we go back to the context of what we first mentioned at the beginning. James wrote, therefore, lay aside all the filthiness and overflow of wickedness, and receive the meekness, receive with meekness the implanted word, which is able to save your souls. When he talks about laying stuff aside, what's he talking about? I want that carnal mindset. Lay that aside. And when he talks about with meekness, we incorporate in our lives the implanted word. That's that spiritual mindset. That's when we attain that. Verse 22, but be doers of the word, not hearers only, deceiving yourself. For if anyone is a hearer of the word and not a doer, he is like a man observing his natural face in the mirror. For he observes himself, goes away, and immediately forgets what kind of man he was. And he who looks into the perfect law of liberty and continues in it, he is not a forgetful hearer, but a doer of the work. This one will be blessed in what he does. If anyone among you thinks he is religious and does not bridle his tongue, deceives his own heart, this one's religion is useless. Pure and undefiled religion before God and the Father is to visit. Is this, to visit orphans and widows in their trouble and to keep oneself unspotted from the world. We want to develop the kind of mindset that God can be proud of, the kind of mindset that's going to save us. James clearly points it out to us. It's got getting rid of the things that are evil, the things that are sinful, the things that are unclean. Lay those things aside. That includes the way we think. That's not just the things we're doing with our hands and our feet, our bodies, our mouths. But it starts in the way we think. Because here's the thing. Let's say I want to lose weight. And I want to do that, and I try to stop eating, but I never really try to change my mindset about food. I'm not going to be very successful. I first have got to cleanse my mind of the lustful thoughts for overeating and indulgence. And I've got to clear that out and fill it in with something else. The same works in our spiritual life. We try to live as a Christian. We try to do the right thing. But we still bring into our minds evil, sinful things. Until I get my mind right, I'm never going to be right. Because, yeah, maybe I'll be okay for a little while. And I'll be able to act a Christian for a little while. But I'll never be successful until I get my mind started right first. How spiritually minded are you tonight? Do you need to respond tonight? You need to give some consideration to your mindset in your life. If you're not a Christian, now's a wonderful opportunity to make that change. Become a child of God. If you have any need, please come as together we stand and sing.